Thanks, Kat. Well, welcome everyone. Looks like a really straightforward meeting this month. We can start with some introductions. I'll just go around. I'm Richard Sullivan, Council Co-Chair and Community Engagement Co-Chair. Kat?
Pat Tochkir, Council Staff.
Hi, Kat. Stephen?
Stephen Spano, AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Hi, Stephen. Laura?
Laura Thomas, Council Member.
Hi, Laura. Lee?
Lee Jewell, Council Member.
Welcome, Lee. Kira.
Kira, Council Staff.
Hi, Kira. TJ.
Hi, TJ Lee, Council Member.
Hi, TJ. Welcome. Okay, so let's see if we can throw up today's agenda for a review and approval. Looks very straightforward. Anyone have anything they'd like to add or mention? Okay. Today's agenda is approved. Hold, someone say something? Okay. How about the minutes for June 4th? Anyone have anything to add? And I just noticed the carry forward. I was one of the people they asked to sign those, and it went back and forth, and I got the final one today from John Ainsley. That's been put through to HRSA, so that's a go. Those forms have all been signed. All right. That's reviewed and approved. Thank you, Kira. Any announcements today? Okay. Everyone okay? Okay. Public comment? No. Stephen, please put some life into this moribund. Spanos.
Well, first, just a little bit of housekeeping. If you had a chance to review this month's report, I was finally able to kind of get back from a tech perspective the division of new cases, pending cases, and closed cases. That was something that I was doing for a while, and then AORP switched over to Salesforce, and then we seemingly lost that functionality. And now, after working with one of our folks here, I was able to get that functionality back. So hopefully that is a little bit of a helpful map of, like, seeing how long some of these cases linger on, seeing how long, some of them close out. And then also note that these narratives don't include individual referrals. So that final graph there does indicate, the number of cases that have been opened compared to the number of those cases that are referrals. And so, you'll notice that for things like housing services, a significant number of those are for referrals for either subsidies or trying to get somebody into supportive housing, as well as for food. Almost every instance of that case of those actually all of those cases this year so far, none of them have been denials of service. They've only been referrals. So I just wanted to point out kind of the new little format that I have. Hopefully that's helpful. I will kind of, as always, just highlight a couple of things that I think are noteworthy, or things that we might need to follow for a minute. On page one, and also on page two, I wanted to highlight this because this is an example of how this is 2025-40, which there's actually two different cases for this client, which is not unusual for HCAP, if you remember. This is a client where, the quick narrative is The client was divorced from their husband. They are not in communication with the husband, don't want to be in communication with the husband, can't be in communication with the husband. But yet they are somehow their health insurance is still connected, and they've been denied services at multiple clinics because their insurance is still connected to an out-of-network provider, and can't seem to unhitch their health care. So, nonetheless, they're experiencing some health issues. They can't get a primary care physician, although they do have access to medication through the currently insured provider, and which is not in the public system, which is that's kind of the problem here, because I don't have my usual kind of go-to tools to get access. And they have some significant dental issues. The client also experiences a lot of trauma around dental stuff. And so one of the reasons that they're currently not able to obtain services is with the last time they tried to obtain services with their provider, they had some involuntary movements that made it very dangerous for the client to obtain dental services at that time. Just like their hands and, just kind of reflexive movements that were kind of dangerous to have the person in the chair with. And so they need a higher level of care that can't be supported without appropriate referrals. So the problem that we are in, which is a problem that I often experience with a lot of my clients, whether it's them trying to receive dental services or in some instances, supported housing services where there's some medical need, at like, for example, an RCFCI, if they don't have a primary care physician, I can't do any, right? I can't, their primary care is their access to every other service in some instances. Like it's the only way I can get a case manager on board. It's the only way I can get them referrals to specialty services, right? So a client oftentimes comes in with this kind of what they're saying, what they're feeling is an urgent need, and very well may be an urgent need. But the system of care doesn't support any low barrier access to resolve that issue. So I raise that here just to kind of illustrate. I have confidence that we'll get through this. I don't know how long it will take. Some of it is, is going to require client follow-up, but I raise it just to kind of illustrate that challenge that we experience pretty often. I wanted to also highlight another challenge, and I know this is important to the community. If you look on page 20, sorry, page two, client number 2025-09. I raise this just because there is obviously a big push towards getting folks into treatment, whether they want it or not. We still the system of care has gaps in our ability to do that. This is a client who actually you might remember from the previous 6 months of reports. The client has been trying to was trying to access medically assisted detox. We finally did get the client into medically assisted detox, and they were exited to the street. They didn't get into a 90-day program. So, it's like things like this where, the system of care just isn't working, and the kind of, for this particular client, they're seeking my services, and I fear that they're jeopardizing their own kind of or frustrating their own efforts at sobriety just because the line that should be there for them to follow is disjunct. I wanted to also highlight page 2025-11. This is another client looking for dental services. I highlighted this only because, this is a client who is well connected to the system of care and still needing, some oral surgery. The barriers to access, this is going on nearly 2 years that he's had to have two teeth pulled. And it's been referral after referral. The client has gotten a lot of infections. He's had to be on antibiotics. Not that that has caused any significant problems, but it certainly runs the risk of affecting his health And he's a senior and a long-term survivor as well. So, the chances of like long-term antibiotic treatment, who knows what it's going to do. So the longer that these things delay, the more problems that they seem to present to folks. And not to mention the frustration of dealing with that pain for so long, and then each delay becomes just yet another thing to perseverate on and to fall asleep with anxiety over. So I'm doing my best to request a reasonable accommodation to expedite this, but currently, after 2 years now, the client was finally given a date to have oral surgery, and that's not until September. So that's what we're looking at for oral surgery services, it seems. I wanted to go to just quickly talk about a success, and then I'll kind of leave it up for folks. But on page 4, 2025, 35, this is an instance where the simple filing of a grievance actually did, result in some level of relief for the client. The client was in the hospital. They were discharged in such a hurry that no one took out her IV, and so the client like left with the IV, and then got a phone call back while she was like basically pulling into her own driveway. And was like, oh, did this happen? I don't have notes that the IV was taken out. She's like, well, no, I didn't know why it was still in me, but you guys discharged me. And they said, we'll come back. And when the client drove back, the nurse met her in the parking lot and pulled the IV out without even like inviting. She said, I need to use the bathroom. Like, can I use the bathroom? And they took her into the bathroom. Anyway, the client filed her own grievance, which is not totally unusual. I would prefer if a client comes to me beforehand, just so I can clean it up and make sure that it goes through the proper channels. But in this instance, the client already had a response from the service provider, and the service provider basically, said sorry, was the thing, and then but kind of misrepresented the facts, and it said, well, we're glad we were able to get you back into the hospital to have that taken care of. And she was like, Stephen, that's not what happened. They didn't even bring me back. Like I got, so I redrafted the grievance to kind of more accurately describe what the client's experience was, and requested that they acknowledge that and escalate it again. So it got a second review, and the grievance did come back with an affirmative kind of response saying, we're sorry we misrepresented in our last letter. Definitely want to acknowledge, what it is that actually happened. We do know that this, that you were met in the parking lot. And that was honestly to the client's satisfaction, just like not being misstated, not being misunderstood, and not being kind of dismissed by, by the grievance process. Sometimes that's really all it takes is an acknowledgement of whatever rupture happened. But in that instance, the client really didn't even feel comfortable. Just like, what if I have to go back to that hospital? Like, what, how do I, what do I, how am I supposed to feel, knowing that they did that to me and then didn't, and then just like mischaracterized it. So she felt a little bit better after that, feels more comfortable staying connected to the system of care. And so I would call that a success, even if only a nominal one. And with that, I'll make myself available for any other questions, or if anybody sees anything else on the report they'd like me to talk about. I will say I took in 20 new clients this month. And that's just HCAP. So it's been a very busy month at my desk. And I'm grateful to do the work, but it's a long report.
What do you consider the reason for the uptick in new clients?
I have no idea. I really don't know. I don't have data to support that. I just take it as I go. There's months where the previous month there were very few intakes. I don't have a it's I, anything I say would be pure conjecture.
Thanks for your work, Stephen, as usual. That was pretty hairy. An IV still attached on discharge. Then they just had them drive back through like a Taco Bell drive-through.
That's exactly what I said in the grievance. I said it would be more accurate. That's nearly exactly what I said. I said it would be more accurate to characterize this as drive-through medical services.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks for all your hard work, Steve.
Yeah.
So, Stephen, I'm just curious. So the first client you were talking to us that had a divorce, was he was trying to get unconnected to his husband's health care?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, if he has a divorce decree, can't he just do that by his own?
Well, yeah. I mean, it takes, there's, you know, there's some complications, right? The client, the client also needs to, not all of my clients have the immediate ability to follow through on things like that. And so we're dealing with multiple disabilities and a lack of connection to care and case management support. You know, I don't have the paperwork currently to be able to support on that level. My understanding is there's kind of mutual restraining orders too. So the client can't necessarily, contact and just like ask the simple question. So I'm working through it to the best of my ability. I have a couple of avenues to success. You know, a main thing for me is the client is able to get medication, and I don't want to mess with it with his insurance until I know. But he was like kind of on his last like couple of weeks of pills, and I don't want to unhitch any insurance until he has his next supply of HIV meds, because I don't know how long it's going to take. You know, I need like at it would be, I would feel much more comfortable having a 3-month window where we could sort this all out. You know, I certainly don't want to be talking with somebody when they're, you know, when they're running the risk of losing their viral suppression. And, you know, I'm trying to think about it from an overall health perspective the best I can.
Anyone else have anything for Stephen?
No,
thanks
thank
a lot,
you.
Stephen. Oh, huh?
Thank you.
Thanks,
I guess,
Stephen.
I guess I do have a, I mean, I am extremely frustrated on behalf of the person who went through detox and then didn't get referred to treatment. And, you know, the health department keeps telling us how much work they're doing to get people into treatment and services. You know, yeah, they keep talking about how important this is and blah, blah, blah. And yet people are still falling through the cracks, which we know, but it's just, I don't know. I don't even know what point I'm trying to make. I'm sorry.
I mean, I think you're voicing frustration in the same way that I would like to voice frustration. You know, there was a really shocking number, and this is a while ago, so I don't know what the current number is, but I would be curious to see what the current number is. There was a really shocking number a few years ago that Bill Hirsch brought up, which was like something like 85% of the people that were discharged from substance use facilities were discharged to homelessness, right? It's kind of frustrating their purpose when you send them out under that stressful situation that it doesn't do a body good, and folks are going to fall back on their normal coping mechanisms in their normal neighborhoods. And so, you know, that is, I don't know, I don't have that current number. I would be curious to know what it is. I forget where we accumulated that number from. But we're
it
also
has gotten in. Better. I will give them that. That number has gotten better, and they've done a better job of not discharging people back to homelessness. But, you know, it's sort of like if people are unhoused when they come into treatment, as many people are, unless there's a commitment to house them,
right?
You know, they will just be. And we don't have enough housing for everyone, but the city has been investing in these sort of step down or transitional housing. And, you know, it may mean that you're out at Treasure Island for 6 months or something like that. Like, it's not always optimal, but that's this Marina Inn that they're just trying to open against the wishes of the Marina, who don't want those kind of folks, right? But is that kind of step down housing for folks? But that's even coming out of residential treatment, not coming out of detox. So yeah, I do find that really appalling that somebody wasn't being referred into residential treatment, especially if they wanted to be referred into residential treatment and they weren't able to access it.
Yeah, I do want to note, right, that also, this is a case that I'm just kind of getting into this, at least this part of it. A lot of it was trying to get them into detox first, because that was the first requirement, the first hurdle. It took a long time to get there. Anything that happens, however, right, from now on is kind of a new issue for me, and I'm really only working off of the client's report. I have not had an opportunity to contact the service provider yet, so I don't know exactly what happened. I'm sure there will be some difference in reality when I speak with them. That's not unusual. But, you know, as service providers, we should be meeting folks where they're at and hopefully anticipating some of these things and some of these needs. But I understand it's not possible in every instance. I know I saw Thomas's hand up too, and I maybe ignored him too long.
No, I appreciate that. And I was just kind of responding to Laura, and it's just, I think you talked yourself, or Laura, so I was like, but I'm like, we could put in a request for somebody to present to the council with regards to what's going on there. That would, because I've had the same, I actually appreciated what you said, Laura, like things aren't better. And when things were changing, I was like, I didn't feel confident kind of referring people into a system that wasn't going to meet their needs. And so reassured basically that the system had improved. So I was like, okay. So, but I don't know if a presentation on those improvements would be helpful or not. I don't want to waste people's time either. That situation. So that's just
the I forget where that statistic came from, whether that was our EPI report or whether that was some other surveillance method. I can't remember where the number came from.
It may have come out from one of the so the Department of Public Health is required to give these treatment on demand reports to the Board of Supervisors, going back to the Prop T that we passed years ago saying treatment on demand is the city policy, which comes as a shock to anyone who's ever tried to access treatment, but it is our stated policy. That is one of the things that they've been trying to address. The most recent report that covers the last calendar year is out and is going to be presented to the Board of Supervisors later this month. So that's certainly a, you know, background information that could be shared. It might not be the worst thing in the world to get a presentation to the Planning Council on sort of, here's the current state of substance use disorder treatment, you know, sort of focused around here's the treatment on demand report and sort of here's where the gaps still are. Here's where this is. I do know that there are a number of data EPI and data efforts underway within the Department of Public Health around sort of understanding what the need is for these for treatment services. But I am not sure to what extent they are incorporating HIV into those metrics in any way. And I don't think HIV really shows up in the treatment on demand report. I can look for the last one, the most recent one. I guess it's FY 2023-24 is possibly the most recent one. Yeah, because it's got Dan Tsai's name on it. So yeah, it wouldn't be a bad idea to ask whether it's Dr. Cunnins or someone from the health department to come and present.
I would certainly appreciate hearing the current state of that.
Great. Not sure how to move that forward other than looping in Mark with regards to that request. Yeah, okay. But do I have to do anything? Yeah, great.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you all.
Needs assessment, COLA update.
Yeah, I can take that. So as far as our needs assessment, we are currently continuing our outreach. And currently we have conducted 26 interviews. So that's a pretty good amount. We are trying to conduct more because we are hoping to present in August. But we do want to get a good number of interviews in. So depending on where we are by the end of this month, that'll really determine whether we can present in August or not. It is looking good though. Any questions about that before I move on to COLA? No. All right. As far as the COLA, I did want to ask the group if anyone wanted to suggest a new target for the COLA. We have been working now for over a year on the target youth, but we haven't been able to really get anyone interested. So I think for now, we should then move on to a new target to ensure that we can have some sort of COLA presentation by the end of the year. Thomas.
I don't know how specific we can get, but folks who are undocumented, I'm really quite concerned and curious with regards to people accessing services with the current climate that's going on. It would be really nice to have some information to support addressing things. So that's my first thought, and then trans folks as well. So it's a similar kind of energy with regards to attacks, but I have definitely been hearing in multiple spaces that people are not showing up for services. Even like the Uber driver that I was in with was reporting to me, like, I just don't see folks anymore. It just kind of disappeared and not even initiating ride services. I was like, no, that's tragic. Those are my thoughts.
I was thinking along the same lines as what Thomas just said, maybe something to do with the current state of affairs, basically, like with ICE and that demographic and what they're going through and how it affects their access to services. But following that up is, how do we catch such a, no pun intended, a captive audience like that? No one wants to really come forward and see the light of day. How are we going to get information from an understandably underground population right now?
I also think it's we should not be asking people for their documentation status or collecting in any way any information about people's documentation status, which makes it challenging to collect information from them. But I would encourage us to think about creative ways that don't require, like, hey, are you undocumented? You know, not that that's how we would approach it, but just given that, you know, the what's happening at the federal level in particular about taking information that the state has sent in and, you know, using it to punish, like, it's just, we just need to not be asking people those questions.
Could a COLA ever be built around just getting that information? If we can't get it from the who we're thinking of as participants, maybe the services that they seek, talk to those folks, care navigators, nurses, care providers, like the places they would be going, maybe get statistics and conversation from them. If we can't get, I don't know if that would be a true COLA. Participation would be lacking, and then there's for safety concerns, and then the things Laura mentioned. Can we dig with maybe the parameter services that they'd be seeking, and let's see some statistics, a drop in numbers? What are you seeing? What are concerns that are being voiced to you?
I know we have done a provider needs assessment before. So I'm assuming I can double check with Mark though, regarding, but I think given the current political climate, it is a very important group to focus on. I do want to echo that the only issue I could see, well, there's a lot of issues with that, but a big issue that I could see coming up if we focused on this COLA and asked folks who are undocumented to come in, would be that we would probably see a lack of participants. And I do want to probably echo that there, it could be, especially since these are made public, they are anonymous, but it could be, I think, again, a lack of participation because of that.
So I can
Go
see
ahead.
that, but I would maybe suggest, and it gets tricky with this, but like offer a fully Zoom interview and unfortunately do individual interviews, and use the service providers to see if they can reach out to people to do that to make them feel a little more secure so they're not going to a location. So that would be my thought on that. But and also, I kind of think, Richard, I like your idea, but I don't know if we would really, it would all be secondhand sort of stuff, and that's not bad. But if we really want to know what's going on with this community, it's probably better to get it directly from them. That's my thought. Sorry.
Thank you, TJ. Thomas?
Yeah, I was at the Latino Wellness Center, which is kind of a, it's a drop-in space, for lack of a better word, that we fund with Instituto Familiar de la Raza and Mission Neighborhood Health Center. And they, a lot of folks, like they have a trans night and an MSM night, and the people are there. So it's not, and it's a mix of folks with regards to documentation and not documentation. So I like the idea of kind of, this isn't necessarily the strongest scientific thing just because it's a small number, right? It's not as if we're going to publish in a big hurry or we need 500 samples or anything to kind of prove what we're looking for. We're just looking for some themes. So I would go with either secondhand or anonymous or yeah. So I like the idea of just being creative, and we don't. I was at a CDC meeting last week, and folks were like, do we really need people's addresses? Like there was really some nice critical thinking about like what kind of documentation do we really need to do to kind of guide our work and thinking outside the box with regards to the things that are currently going on. So if we could just kind of put all that into the mix, I think it'd be, yeah.
So Kira, with the input that you're hearing, Kira and Kat, would this sounds like a relevant topic for sure. Would you like to bring this to Mark and you guys roundtable it? Maybe we could hear more at steering, or do we have enough time to wait till the next community engagement?
Yeah, we can. It
Are we
sounds
in
like this is.
agreement that this would be something we'd like to pursue as a committee?
We can definitely table it for and bring it back for next month's meeting. And maybe then we will have an official vote. Because I do want to talk to Mark about this and see how he feels about it. So if folks also have any other ideas or think of anything, a different target population for next month's meeting, that can be something we can also talk about. How does
Absolutely.
that sound?
Does that sound good to everyone? All righty.
Yeah, it sounds good to me, and I appreciate folks being sensitive to that. We are going to do a summit of some sort in September around this particular issue that we bring. The summit will be in Spanish. That's kind of a follow-up to what we had last year. And it's going to be cross-bank. So I really want to have this discussion with regards to how our the current status in the environment impacting folks. Yeah, so it'll be nice to kind of have some information specifically to speak to and present to folks.
Thomas, tell us a little bit more about the summit. Who's putting it on and who's invited?
It's preliminary. We're going to do it at the library. I don't know if we have an exact date yet. I want to say September. We're hoping for maybe 100 to 120 folks. We did it last year with our East Bay Game to Zero partners and Game to Zero here. And it was really successful. The whole event was done in Spanish. And there is something, it brings a different nuance with regards to having something centered in Spanish and not in English. I really kind of felt that last year. There was a need for it. Last year's topic was more about addressing the greater work burden for individuals who are bilingual in various settings, just due to the fact that they're often pulled in different directions because they are one of two or three people within an agency that actually are bilingual, and how that kind of traumatizes staff and how that gets passed on to clients. So this year, the topic is what we just mentioned. We're hoping to just get Jose on our team is actually taking the lead on it and putting the logistics together. So it's similar to kind of the onboard SF event that we just put on a few months ago.
Thank
Any
you.
other questions? Yeah.
So before we close, anyone have any final thoughts? We all good? Our next community engagement meeting is same time online, August 6th. I'm sure I'll be seeing you others on online this month. Everyone be well, be safe. And that concludes today's community engagement meeting.
Thank you.
Laura Thomas, do you have a moment?
Yes.
Thanks, everyone.
Laura.